Hello, hello. This is Kathy Colas Audiobooks, and today we have episode one of Judge Not by Nikki Stern. Sam Tate is back. For those of you that have been listening for a while, this is the fourth book in the Sam Tate mystery series. There is a serial killer on the loose, putting detectives across the country on trial. And when they lose, it's more than just the case. Here we go. His name was John, aka Jack Frost. He would become the first victim in a multi-state killing spree that put law enforcement on high alert, involved multiple agencies, and placed Sam Tate in the center of the most dangerous case of her career. Frost never had a clue. On his last day on Earth, the Sacramento homicide detective reported to his precinct as usual. It was a beautiful April morning. He had little on his plate, just one open case. 6 months from retirement, he wasn't choosing to rest on his laurels. But if work slowed from time to time, he wasn't about to argue. Spring fever had taken hold of most of the officers on duty, and no wonder. People were finally rid of their pandemic masks, and only the surliest naysayers grumbled, until the next one. Sacramento had a lot going for it. The mountains on one side, the oceans on the other. Plenty of entertainment, strong sports teams, and a growing economy. The weeks between late March and mid-June, though, were in a class by themselves, with mild temperatures, plenty of sunshine, and wildflowers in abundance. Frost stood outside the precinct at midday, indulging in a cigarette and considering his good fortune. He felt content, a state of grace he never expected to reach. Yes, he missed his Ellen. They'd been married 20 years, and she'd been gone 10. Memories consoled him, as did the presence in his life of his daughter and her husband, a good man, and their two well-adjusted children. His professional life had been likewise satisfactory. He loved his work. Fairly routine, except for one case 22 years earlier that had briefly made him a statewide celebrity. A perp, Frost still thought of assailants that way, who the media dubbed the back-to-school killer, had murdered 5 teachers, 2 in September, 2 in January after the winter break, and another following spring break. The women were stabbed in the eye and left in front of 3 different middle schools, along with black and white notebooks. Some of the bodies were discovered by students arriving early. The community was afraid and outraged. After the first death, Frost and his partner, Lonnie DeMarco, looked for a connection between the victim and the killer. Maybe he was an ex-boyfriend or husband. Maybe he'd been her student, someone who felt unfairly singled out or ignored in class. Maybe she'd expelled his son. When the second body dropped 10 days later, Frost began to consider the bigger picture. The murderer had a problem with teachers in general. Was he a serial killer? Bodies 3 and 4 confirmed it. The California Bureau of Investigation came on to help. Still, no break in the case. By that time, most of the state knew about the back-to-school killer. Officials considered canceling the annual State Educators Conference, scheduled for downtown. When CBI and local police promised both visible and undercover protection, they relented. Frost posed as an elementary school history teacher. He made friends, attended a few lectures, and kept an eye out for anyone out of place. The second day, he noticed a small man with a large briefcase skulking through the crowded hallways. When the man reached inside to retrieve a piece of paper, Frost contrived to bump into him. As he'd expected, the contents of the briefcase spilled onto the carpet. A dozen notebooks, a small bottle of chloroform, and a lethal-looking stiletto. The piece of paper contained the names of 12 attendees, all women. The suspect turned out to be a long-ago student, traumatized by a grade school teacher. He kept his phobia repressed until his daughter became engaged to a professor. The killer confessed on the spot and pleaded guilty in a packed courthouse some months later. Frost and DeMarco were feted and offered promotions. Each declined, but they agreed to represent the department, along with the chief, naturally, to the media. There was a trip to the governor's mansion, a couple of national interviews, and a ceremony where the mayor gave them the keys to the city as Frost's proud family looked on. Nothing remotely as exciting ever happened again. Cancer took both his partner and his wife. His daughter married and moved to Los Angeles. He spent the holidays with his grandkids and tried to imagine a life of retirement. The daughter had it on good authority that security jobs in L.A. were plentiful, especially for a one-time cop with a headline-making case on his resume. Frost clocked out at 5, picked up Chinese, and headed to his one-story, three-bedroom house. It had always felt a little cramped. Now he rattled around in it. If he sold while the market was hot, he might be able to afford a tiny condo in Los Angeles. At the edge of nightfall, he heard a knock. He opened the door to a smiling face. "Hi," the visitor said, handing him a black and white notebook. Frost looked down. Rookie mistake. He jerked his head up in time to see the sharp object pierce his cornea and make its way into his brain. Lieutenant Sam Tate spun in her new chair, a gift from the department, according to Sheriff Tanner. He'd also granted her a more flexible work week, which gave her a half day off on Fridays. A raise would have been preferable, but Sam wasn't about to quibble. The half days off meant she could spend time in D.C. with FBI Assistant Director Terry Sloan. Their work kept them 70 miles apart. The arrangement wasn't going to be long-term, not that she knew what lay next. For now, she was content with a steady man who loved her, a new house, and a rescued mixed breed named Jax. She still longed to put to bed her nagging questions over the wedding shooting that destroyed her family. At least the nightmares that had plagued her since childhood appeared less frequently. Her professional life was something else. 7 months after she apprehended the dry ice killer in New York, during a 2-week vacation in Manhattan, she went back to her job as criminal commander for the Talbot County Sheriff's Office on Maryland's Eastern Shore. Being second in command gave her some power. She loved her team, respected her boss, appreciated the opportunity. But she was relegated to staying in place. Sam hated the idea that she'd reached her peak at 38 years old. She wasn't about to find another position, not when she'd held 4 jobs in 11 years. She missed being a detective. Her therapist told her she was on her way to a new life, one that might put the bad dreams behind her for good. She just needed to be patient. "Ha," she said aloud. Jax raised his head to look at her, prompting an affectionate smile. "All okay, good boy," she said. Satisfied, he let out a sigh of contentment and returned to his nap, only to be startled by a knock on the door.
"Got a minute, Lieutenant?"
The lanky young man who popped his head in always made Sam smile. His quick thinking on a serial case last year earned him a promotion from patrol deputy to detective. His colleagues also learned Pat McCready could get off a great shot if required. "Always for you, Detective McCready," she responded. "What's up?" Jax bounded over in search of a head scratch. McCready complied, his mind elsewhere.
"I came across some information while I was compiling notes from the domestic complaint last night," he said.
"If it pertains to that case, you should take it up with Sergeant Gordy. I'll review everything at our next meeting." McCready bounced on his toes, trying to keep his natural enthusiasm in check.
"Lieutenant, it's not about any of our current cases. It's more something that relates to your, experience.
I mean, it's probably nothing, but..." Sam felt a momentary flutter. "Okay, Detective, tell me what you found."
"This all started with my uncle's brother-in-law, Roy," McCready began. "He's from Sacramento, okay? Well, he was, but he's moved back east to be closer to the family after his divorce. Okay, that may not be relevant," he added when Sam frowned. "What is important is that he told a story about some killer that was active right when he lived there. The guy murdered 5 teachers over 7 months, stabbed them through the eye, and left their bodies right in front of the schools. Pretty grisly. 2 Sacramento detectives caught him. California has the death penalty, and back then, they used it on this guy, although it took 7 years.
"How is this relevant to me, or rather, to this department?" McCready put his tablet in front of her. He brought up the website for the Sacramento Bee.
"I decided to research the case on my own time, Lieutenant. Just curious to see how crime-solving was covered in the days before everyone used social media. Then, I found this recent obit for one of the lead detectives, name of Jack Frost, if you can believe it."
Sam scanned the article. "Says here he was killed outside his home 2 months ago," she summarized. "An ice pick to the eye and a black and white notebook at the scene. Creepy, even perversely clever, but not a shock. The man was a homicide detective. He likely investigated plenty of violent crimes during his career. Someone with a grudge decided to take him out using the same method as the serialist."
"Oh, hold on, Lieutenant. There's something else I need to show you."
McCready turned the tablet around, brought up a second screen, and turned it back. All the while, he was shaking his foot fast enough that Sam felt her desk vibrate. "Another news site. This one belonged to the Billings Gazette. Curious," she read. "Rosebud Undersheriff found dead at Tubb Ranch," by Cameron Doyle. "Forsyth, Montana, June 14th. Rosebud County Sheriff's Office has announced the death of Undersheriff Mackenzie Mack Scott, 38. His body was found on Anika Vista Ranch, north of Lockwood, nearly a week after he went missing. The ranch belongs to the Tubb family. Dylan Tubb, son of owner Carter Tubb, found the body around 6 p.m. yesterday near one of the cattle pens. The family has disavowed any knowledge of the incident before the discovery. The death is considered suspicious. It's been cool at night, which may have preserved some of the biological evidence," said a representative from the coroner's office in Billings. "We hope that will aid in our investigation." Max Scott achieved some notoriety when he caught Deke Garrity, a.k.a. the Cattleman Killer, 8 years ago. Garrity was accused of murdering 3 prominent cattle ranchers by breaking their necks and then branding them because he believed they practiced animal cruelty. Garrity was sentenced to death and executed last year after his appeal failed. "This is a heinous crime," declared Rosebud County Sheriff Jared Green. "Mac was a dedicated law officer, a loving family man, and a good friend of mine.
He asked that anyone with information call the department hotline. We will continue to update this story as further information becomes available. Sam reread the article, aware of MacReady's intense gaze. He wanted a reaction. She wanted to keep a lid on her emotions until she had a chance to examine them. "This article is dated a few days ago," she observed.
"Yes, ma'am."
"These two homicides have elements in common, I'll grant you that. A dead investigator, a duplication of the M.O. used by a serial killer, brought down by the very men who are now victims of someone else. On the other hand, this Montana case isn't nearly as specific. People's necks are broken, either by accident or on purpose. As far as branding a victim, well, that may not be unusual out in Montana. Let me ask you, have you located any more such incidents?"
"Not as of yet," MacReady admitted.
"Pat, you can do anything you want on your own time, and that includes researching unusual cases, but if you're in here to ask me if I think there's cause for further action, I'm afraid I don't. Nor do I think in any event we'd have any jurisdiction. Do you?"
"No, ma'am. I guess not officially."
MacReady reached for his laptop. He looked like a puppy who'd been sent to his crate. "Look, the similarities between these two homicides could be a fluke. But you keep track. If another detective known for chasing serial killers goes down, let me know. I'll pass it along to the FBI, okay? And let's keep this between us."
"Yes, ma'am. Thank you."
He rose. "Shut the door on your way out, please." As soon as he left, Sam pulled up a copy of Police Chief on her screen and started scrolling through the magazine for a statistic she'd seen. There it was. Fewer than 50 active duty officers die annually from all causes. Halfway through this year, the magazine listed 23 deaths, 11 dead from disease or accident, and 12 killed by suspects in traffic stops or domestics. One robbery, one drive-by. Then there was the dead detective stabbed with an ice pick, and now a dead undersheriff with a broken neck. Different methods, different months, different states, different settings. Nothing that suggested a pattern, and certainly nothing that made the cases remotely her concern. Or so she reminded herself as she reached for her phone. And there you have it. Don't forget to join me on Wednesday for episode 2 of Judge Not, by Nikki Stern. To check out more of my work, go to my website at kathycolas.com. That's kathycolas.com. If you're an author looking to turn your book into an audiobook, email me at kathycolas@gmail.com. Let's talk. And if you like the podcast, please leave a review or share it on social media. Thanks so much for listening. And I'll see you on Wednesday.